Dad, I know you think I'm crazy.
I have to mind those big rocks.
But I feel her. I hear her heartbeat. She's so close.
So what does her heartbeat sound like?
Mighty.
Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Wendy.
And today we're talking about the long-awaited, 14 years in the making, Avatar, The Way of Water. So get your popcorn ready, sit back and relax, because
it's showtime, folks.
All right, so here we are, Wendy. This is exciting.
This is exciting. Last time we podcasted was House of the Dragon.
Yes, it was. And before that, God knows when. So
Game of Thrones. No.
Yep.
Last time was Handmaid's Tale. Mm-hmm. Yep. Season 3, episode 1.
Yes.
Yep. Which became so important to me. Like, that has been honestly my best podcasting experience was podcasting on Handmaid's Tale. It's the thing that somebody would have to fight me to make me give it up.
I'm so, so glad. That's wonderful. That is so wonderful. I'm a little jealous, but I'm so glad that the podcast kept going and that it's so popular and that you guys are having
such a good
time. Are
you caught up with
it? I am still season behind. I usually watch Handmaid's Tale once the season's over, just so I can like kind of get through it at my own pace.
Well, catch up and you can join in on one of ours, because I suspect it's going to be 2024, I think they said.
Okay. They've been cranking out those seasons. That's been that's been great, because everybody else, we have to wait so long for everything else. Kind of like we had to wait for Avatar 2.
That was a long wait.
It was such
It just
a long kind of wait.
Became a joke.
Yes.
Like, they're producing 17 more movies, but you won't be alive when they come out.
Right, exactly. That 2070 will play a hologram on your gravestone.
Yeah.
So for those who are maybe listening without seeing the movie, or just interested in, you know, how the movie was before you make a decision on seeing it, maybe you have seen it and you have all sorts of opinions on it. I'm sure we, you know, Wendy and I are very strong-minded people, so we are going to have our opinions as well, which is why we're doing this. But if you need the plot, I grabbed a plot off of IMDb, and it says, Jake Sully lives with his newfound family formed on the extrasolar moon Pandora. Once a familiar threat returns to finish what was previously started, Jake must work with Neytiri and the army of the Na'vi race to protect their home.
And if you haven't seen it, stop and go out to the theater and watch it, and then come back.
And then come back. Yes. Press pause.
Yep.
So what are your general thoughts about the movie? We both only saw it once.
I was pretty surprised by it.
Oh, yeah?
I'm not sure what my expectations were. I think, and I will definitely get into this more as we get into our points, but I thought it was going to be very much like the first one, and I thought it was pretty different.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. And even in the first half hour, I had this like kind of pit in my stomach, because I'm like, oh, this kind of seems like the same exact movie as before, just now they have kids. But
and guns.
Yeah, and guns. They have kids and guns. But then once they leave the Omotikaya clan and they go out on their own, the whole movie just shifts, and I really, really enjoyed kind of a deeper plot and a deeper storyline than the first one. So I enjoyed it a lot more than I enjoyed the first one, personally.
I think they're two very different movies and should be judged differently, but I probably liked the first one better.
Yeah.
But I think they're good in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
And I think I probably would have been pretty satisfied with a very similar movie, but I absolutely recognize that probably most people wouldn't have been. Like, most people want more and different. And
right.
Yeah, they don't want to watch the same thing. Whereas I think the things that I loved about the first one, I would have been, I could just watch 4 more hours of that.
Right. Well, I just wanted to go back to Pandora. I could not wait to go back to Pandora. Get on those 3D glasses and just be immersed in it. Oh, it felt so good.
Yep, I agree.
Awesome. Okay, well then let's get into it. What is your first point that you want to go over? Let's talk about it.
My first point is how visually stunning these movies are. Avatar, both the first movie and this sequel, they're both very unique in their visual presentation. There's just nothing out there that's similar. Did you see Lisi's Story?
No.
Lisi's Story was a pretty dark short mini series. I can't even remember what network it was. Strange Indeed covered it, and it was really good.
Okay.
But it had this visual presentation that kind of reminded me, like, the colors were just so rich, and it was so fabricated, you know, in a really great way. And it kind of reminded me of that visually. When the first movie came out, I wasn't really that excited to see it. It wasn't really on my radar. It seemed a bit juvenile. I went mostly because my kids were excited about it. And when I walked out, I had been mesmerized by the visuals. Like, I loved it so much more than I thought I was going to. And just like you said, just soaking in the visuals of that world were just amazing. And so I was really excited about this one. And this movie, in that respect, did not disappoint at all. And in my opinion, was even more stunning than the first one. I found my eyes flickering to all the corners of the screen because I wanted to soak in all the details, especially because I knew I was podcasting. So I was trying to really pay hyper-focused attention to everything. I know you've been to Disney World in Florida. They have an Avatar land called Pandora. Mm-hmm. And how did you find that when you went?
You know, have you been?
Yeah.
Okay. So we went and it's at the Walt Disney or the Disney Animal Kingdom. And Animal Kingdom closes a lot earlier than the other parks. And I feel like we didn't really get the full Pandora experience because it wasn't fully dark when we had to leave.
Right.
And one of the rides, Flight of the Passage, I think, is what it's called. That was closed.
Oh, but you didn't get it.
I know. But we went on went on the little boat ride, you know, and that was really nice. But, you know, it was a little disappointing for us only because we went during winter hours. They closed at like 6 o'clock and it just it wasn't dark. So, but, you know,
we went for like an after hours thing that was like for resort guests or something like that. And it was dark. It was late. It was like 7 to 10 or something like that. And it was really cool. I had known that I had seen it during the day, and I had known that I had heard that it was really cool at night and wanted to come back. So we specifically did that. And it was really cool.
Awesome.
I think that's why Disney just keeps getting my money, is because of that immersive experience that we get. And like with a movie like this, we can be transferred to walking in that land. And it looks like what we saw on the screen with all the beautiful glowing fauna, and the alien noises that you hear. I mean, that's similar the reason why I like Star Wars Land at Disney as well.
Oh my gosh. Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah, I know. And the ride, Flight of the Passage.
I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
It's you know, you put 3D glasses, you're in front of an immersive screen, and you're basically riding a Banshee. And I think it's the coolest thing ever. It's my favorite ride. Yeah. To me, that's the best thing about these movies, is their ability to immerse us in these worlds. First, the land world of Na'vi, and now this water world of the Metkayina. Am I saying that right?
It is Metkayina.
Metkayina.
Metkayina. And they're all Na'vi people. So it's the forest tribe is the Ometekaya. Ometekaya. Yeah. I had to write it all down. And the reef tribe, the ocean tribe, is the Metkayina.
Metkayina.
Yeah.
So both are incredibly painted with every little detail done beautifully, so that every minute of screen time, to me, especially in the slower moments of the movie, are so visually pleasurable to be a part of. That's what makes these movies a box office hit to me. And a must-see at the theater. Like, the theater experience, I think, is important, at least the first time. And the plot and the dialogue, to me, becomes secondary to the world and the characters that they have created.
Yes. Yeah, you know what? I agree with what you're saying. You know, it's funny because I was thinking about this after I saw The Way of Water. And in the first movie, you know, you really don't care too much about the story because you're so just stunned by the beauty of Pandora. And like, it is just the detail, like you said, the detail of that entire world is just so meticulously crafted. I mean, you know, even when right down to when you see the first movie, when they touch, when Jake Sully touches the little plant and it goes like right back in it, saying it just starts touching all of them, you know?
We just watched the first one like a week before we went, maybe even less. It was while the girls were home, so we watched the first one too.
We actually took the kids when they re-released it in the theaters because they had only seen it at home. And so
that's so funny, yeah.
So we put it on, we went to the 3D experience and we saw it, and they came out and they're like, "That was so much better." And we're like, "I know, it was so much better." So
this movie was meant for 3D and for the big screen.
It's why you get a 3D TV. It's the only reason why.
Right.
So I think with the second movie, you know, we already kind of know what we're going into. We know what Pandora is going to look like. So I definitely did concentrate on the story a little bit more this time. But the minute they got to the reef, and you just went underwater and you saw what Pandora is under the water, I didn't know what to expect, but it was magnificent, magnificent. I love the fact that the spirit tree was underwater, and I love all the new animals and all the new ways to get around. I loved the tiny little details in the Metkayina people, where their tails were stronger because they seems to me that it was used like a rudder, right?
Yeah.
You know, and their coloring was way different. I think it was lighter, you know, to kind of maybe blend in with the water.
Yeah.
You know, so there were like these little differences that, you know, it was like we're the same people, but we obviously look very different because we live in a different climate and we need our bodies to do different things for where we live. And I just really appreciated the fact that James Cameron didn't just have all of them look the same, no matter what. You know, that was a really nice attention to detail that I appreciated.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, those visuals. The minute you put on the glasses, you're like, okay, here we go. I'm really excited. Just show me, you know? And even when they're like in the lab, and you've got the humans with the Na'vi, and you see that they've, you know, they've made over the last, you know, 12 years since the big war, you know, and now they're kind of like living, not together, but they're mingling peacefully with each other. And you see the size difference, how they treat their oxygen and how they, you know, walk around with their oxygen the way that they are. And I thought it was really interesting that the Na'vi only needs to take a breath every like couple of minutes, Whereas mm-hmm. regular humans are like, put it on me. Please don't take it off.
And I guess it's just an endless supply.
Right, right. What yeah. was that? Maybe right. filters? We need that. Does it filter?
Right.
Yeah. I need to change my filter, please. Yeah, right. There were a lot of times, like, I'm looking at Spider and I'm like, how are you still living?
Right.
I don't understand this.
Yeah. Suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, that was a big one for sure. So that's your first one. Did you have anything else on that?
Nope.
Okay. So my first point, I guess, that I really wanted to talk about, it's my favorite part about the movie, is just that there was a real family theme attached to the whole movie. It was saving your family no matter the cost. And I love the fact that, you know, like coming from me and my family, you know, we're a military family, so we had to move a lot. And, you know, I'm watching them leave their community that they're so tight with. They're leaving their families, they're leaving their friends, their home, and they're scared, and they have to go into this new place where they look different and everybody acts different. And it just reminded me of just us every single time we would enter a new community, you know, and you never know how that's going to go, but you always know that you have your core unit, you know, you have your family. And I just love the way that Jake Sully kind of embraced that, and he took that leadership on, because Neytiri wasn't doing too well with it. The kids didn't really enjoy it. Spider wasn't with them, which was a big bummer for, you know, Kiri. And so watching them kind of go through that transition and really start to have to rely on each other and find out how much they really did and didn't know about each other. You know, you see in times of transition like that, you know, you kind of see what your family weaknesses and strengths are. And I thought that they did a really, really good job of highlighting, kind of what that transition looks like with the Sully family. And I love the fact that Jake was so dead set on keeping his family together and saving his family. And that focus drove the whole story to me, you know, right to the very end. You know, I mean, when Neytiri and is it Tuk? Neytiri and Tuk, the youngest girl, mm-hmm. when they were stuck in the water and they didn't know how they were going to get out, that was a big callback to Titanic, by the way, right?
Yes. Yes.
And, but Kiri shows up and she's like, here, Mom, let me give you these beautiful fairy wings, which I thought were awesome. That's gonna mm-hmm. help you. And, you know, she's staying calm and she's saving her family. And, you know, what's the middle kid's name again? It's Lowok. You think I'm saying that right?
I think so.
But when he, you know, and he saves Jake from wherever Jake is, when the ship was going down as well, you know, watching these kids take on, you know, their own leadership and their own, I have to find my family, I have to save my family, you know, you really watch them gel right to the very end. And when Jake looks at Lowok and he says, I see you, I exploded into tears like a big dumb idiot. But I mm-hmm. just loved the family theme of this film. I thought it was the best thing that they could have done, was to really center in on the Sully family.
Yeah. I think I spent a lot of time later trying to figure out what were the core themes in the movie. And I think you're right. It was about sacrifice and family and what you would do to keep it all together.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. And, you know, it, I mean, you're a mom, you're a wife, you have a family just like me. I would go to the ends of the earth too, you know?
Right.
Right. We would do all of that stuff. Like, none of it seemed mm-hmm. outlandish. It was like, yeah, right. Okay. Let's go to battle if it means that I get to keep my family.
And I think maybe that's why I felt anguish. I think because you can really relate to that. You can mm-hmm. really relate to the anguish. And I didn't know where it was going.
No.
So
But once they killed off the oldest kid, I was like, oh, no. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anybody can die.
Yeah.
So what do you got?
So when the credits rolled, when the movie was over, here is what you see. Directed by James Cameron. Screenplay by James Cameron. Story by James Cameron. Based on characters by James Cameron. Edited by, do you want to guess?
Mickey Mouse.
James Cameron. Uh-huh. So I've been a huge fan of Cameron since The Terminator circa 1984. How old were you in 1984, Kristen?
I was 4.
Probably didn't watch The Terminator that year.
No, but I did watch it way too early.
Yeah. But I truly didn't need to see his name pop up 7 times to know that not only was this a Cameron movie, this was a Cameron sequel. Mm. When James Cameron makes a sequel, it's not just double the greatness. It's exponentially more action, more effects, more violence, more.
Yeah.
Cameron did Rambo. He Rambo First Blood Part 2. He did Terminator 2, and he did Aliens. All huge movies that shattered the movie trope that sequels suck. By a lot.
Terminator 2 is much better than the first one.
I mean, I disagree, but I love Terminator 2.
Yeah. I had a crush on Edward Furlong, so that helped.
It's funny because I feel like Terminator 2 is just like Aliens. Like, they're totally different movies. Mm. They're so good, but they're action movies, whereas Alien and Terminator is much more of the drama and the story and setting the plot for the franchise. And I felt very similar in this movie.
Totally. Yeah. Very much so. Yeah.
Like, yeah, it brought back so many recalls to, especially to Aliens for me. Like, I could just see it in the movie making as I was watching it. I kept thinking about Aliens. It had the energy, the action, and the violence upgrades of both of those. At one point, just like you said, when they were racing to the peak of the giant wave, it was so reminiscent of Titanic. The music was the same. I'm sure half that audience was brought right back to that scene.
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. And so, like I said, I've been a huge fan of the Aliens franchise, probably my favorite movies, especially the first two. And mm-hmm. I, you know, and then Sigourney Weaver's in it also, which helps, you know. Yeah. So, totally brought all of that back. And I think initially I was a little disappointed that the movie quickly abandoned the world, the land world mm-hmm. that I don't know the name of.
Omotakaya.
Yes. This is the world that I really fell in love with, its beauty and its gentleness. Mm-hmm. And not that the new world wasn't also beautiful and fascinating, but I guess I had hoped for more of that. And when it kind of changed scenery so quickly, at first I was like, oh, that's not what I expected.
It's jarring.
Yeah. But I mean, if you think about it, it makes sense. James Cameron has had a fascination for the oceans. He said that he made Titanic and The Abyss to justify his love of deep sea exploration and not the mm-hmm. other way around. He has created new technology and set the bar for underwater filming and remotely operated ocean vehicles. He was the first person in the world to dive to the Challenger Deep, which is the deepest part of the Mariana Trench, by himself. He discovered 3 new species, a sea cucumber, a squid worm, and a giant single-celled amoeba.
Amazing.
So it's not really a surprise that this is where Cameron wanted to go with it. And when I walked out of it, I was really glad that he did go in that direction.
That's so funny that you say that because I had the exact same feelings watching the movie. I did not want to leave the trees. Mm-hmm. I just didn't. And right. I felt like Neytiri. I was like, no, why are we leaving the trees?
Right.
Then you go to the ocean and, you know, you see that they're just not very welcoming at first. And mm-hmm. you're just like, oh man, this is just, can we go back to the trees, please? Mm-hmm. And then.
Right. And the nighttime and the glowing and yeah. I really wanted all of that. But I mean, wow, you just have to trust.
World. You have to trust James Cameron. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
It's so weird. Absolutely. And what you said about him being in the Marianas Trench, I just, to me, that's really scary. You know, it's kind of like,
oh my goodness.
I couldn't imagine.
By yourself.
Or with people. Like, it doesn't matter. It's just, to me, there's something about the open sea and then that deep, that dark, that much pressure. Like, I am not a thrill seeker to that extreme.
No.
You know what I mean?
I mean, I'll take a roller coaster.
Yeah.
10,000 people have been on safely.
I'm not going to be the first one to be in the deep part of the ocean where, you know, if something hits you the wrong way, your cube explodes, you know?
And I do feel like the older I get, the less of a risk taker I become. Like, I think to myself, like, yeah, I've always wanted to jump out of an airplane. Mm-hmm. And I could do that. I could do that next week if I wanted to. But, like, it's a risk versus benefit thing.
Yeah.
So I don't.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of people also that are like, oh, I want to be in space. I want to go to space. Wouldn't it be so cool to do a spacewalk? I'm thinking to myself, no, I don't want to look at my home planet. I don't want to look at it. First of all, I want to be on it. And then I'm like tied to a tube in the vacuum of space. Like, to me, that just seems like a nightmare.
No, and it's really like, I've actually done some research on what that does to your body. It's not good.
I totally believe you.
Yeah.
The Abyss, man. What a great movie. James Cameron, he makes such a good movie. Mm-hmm. He's good at it. She has a strong heart. She wants to live. Ugh.
Yeah. I should watch. I've seen like bits and pieces of it, but I haven't rewatched it in a long time. That is a great underrated movie.
Dave loves it. And so he made me sit down and watch it because it was years ago. I'm like, oh, I want to watch it. And then at the end, I'm like, she has a strong heart. Like, I'm just crying.
Underrated acting. Mm-hmm. It's great. Yeah.
Ed Harris is in it, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love him. Sorry, Avatar, but we're going to talk about all of James' movies. Yeah, I love that. Do you have any other information on that?
I think that's it for me.
Oh, that was so cool. I loved hearing all of that. Thank you. So while we're kind of talking about it, I wanted to, you know, just touch on the Metkayina tribe since they're new, right? There are reef people. And, you know, in the beginning, when you were talking about the visuals, we've already talked about how they have, you know, the thicker tails to swim. Their coloration is different. I thought that the way that they, how much stronger their lungs were and how they knew how to essentially breathe underwater without breathing underwater. You know, I love how, you know, when you saw the first movie and you're in the trees, when you're with the Ometekaya people, you see that calmness and that stillness go over Neytiri when it comes to the forest. You know, she's like, breathe in, feel the air, feel the animals. You know, you can really sense just everything around you. And, you know, she recognizes that her home is this breathing, living organism that she is that she has a relationship with, you know. And then you see someone like Neytiri who is that settled in the trees, and you go to the reefs, and it's just like Jake when he was in the trees for the first time. You know, she doesn't understand any of this world or these people, but, you know, you see the actual people, especially the daughter, Rhea, and that's what they called her. Her actual name is Syrea, but they called her Rhea. I thought that she reminded me of Neytiri from the first movie. You know, she's very tuned into her world and her tribe and under the water, and the way that she taught I'm just going to keep this page open and screw my notes. I have my family tree here. And the way that she taught Loak how to breathe underwater, how to experience the world underneath, how to ride the Ilus and the Surops, you know, and bond with them the way that, you know, he only knew how to bond with the Ikran back in the trees. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed watching kind of the orientation of this new community, this new tribe, and this new underwater world with these two young kids. I just thought that it was very reminiscent of the first movie, but it was also just really sweet because it wasn't about like teaching the stupid sky person, you know, the ways of the world. It was like, right. Here, like, welcome to our community. I'm going to teach you this. I think you're really cute, so I kind of want to date you. You know, the little teenage love vibe that was adorable.
Mm-hmm.
I just love it that they both like instantly saw each other and they were both very into each other from the very beginning. I thought that was totally mm-hmm. cute. You know, and it was interesting to see how they treated those that had quote unquote demon blood in them, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that that was a really interesting aspect of kind of the Na'vi and how they view people that are not quite like them, you know, and it's very reminiscent of kind of what we deal with today with, you know, stereotypes and racism and, mm-hmm. you know, tolerance and whatnot. And it's always the younger generation that wants to be more accepting and wants to be, you know, held with their arms a little bit wider for others. And the older generation that's a little bit more set in their ways. And, you know, mm-hmm. they've had some experiences where they don't really want to let outsiders in. And so I appreciated kind of the realistic aspect of that. But once you learned about the tribe, you know, you see that their values, you know, their values are all the same. Their love for their family is all the same. They have a Sahit, which is the healer, with the chief's wife. And then they have the chief, just like you had Neytiri and, Jake as the chief and the, well, she was a future Sahit because her mom was still doing it. But, I just love that we saw this whole new fleshed out community. It wasn't just something that was like skim surface. Like you could tell that there was like a lot of planning that went into this tribe and how they are and how they are with each mm-hmm. other and how their social system lines up and what they eat and how they get their food. And even when you look at the whales, which they called the Tulkun, you know, and the bond that this tribe had with them, it was more than what the Omatakaya have with their Ikron. It was just, mm-hmm. it was like, they could talk to each other. They could celebrate mm-hmm. with each other. They could understand each other in their languages. I mean, to me, yeah. that was very exciting to see something new like that.
They were like familiars or something like that. Like they were something really special. Bonded mm-hmm. together. You could really tell like the grief when they lost one was so palpable. It was awful.
It was. And didn't the baby die as well?
Yes.
It was the baby floating. Yeah, it was the baby floating next to the mom that destroyed me in that moment.
Yep.
It was really bad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was really, really bad. But I loved the fact that you saw Ronal, who is the wife, the Sahit of the Metkayina tribe, you know, and she's just like, I've been bonded with this Tulkun for years. We've celebrated each other's families. We've talked to each other. It's like my best friend, and they just fucking killed her, you know, mm-hmm. and you feel that anguish and that pain mm-hmm. and I grew to love the Metkayina people even more than the Ometakaya people by the end of the movie.
I really liked that initially all of their differences were highlighted, and then as time went on, it became all about their similarities.
Yes. Oh, yeah. What a great, mm-hmm, absolutely, great point.
And, you know, wouldn't we all benefit if we could do that?
If only, right? how about you? What's next for you?
So I will just go ahead and rip the pain, start the pain. I did want to talk about the Tulkun. Am I saying that right? Tolkien?
Sure.
So the Tolkien, which were the whale-like species, which I'm now officially traumatized by. Yeah. You know, listen, kill all the people on The Walking Dead. Kill all the humans you want, but do not mess with fictional, digitally created whale-like creatures that have officially captured my heart.
I'm with you.
I don't know why they do that. Yeah. Like, and I'm a sucker for it, too. Fuck you, James Cameron.
Yeah, that one was bad.
It really was.
Or the Lonely Outcast one.
Oh, my God.
Where you just, like, you just want to, like, hug him. Be okay. Come here.
I mean, it took me a while to get over that. I went to see this with my husband, my daughter, and my daughter-in-law, and we all walked out, and I was like, the whales. And my daughter-in-law was like, I know.
Like holding on.
Like we
to
weren't
each other.
Over it yet.
Right.
And so the Tolkiens, much like real whales, are highly intelligent, emotional creatures. They have sworn themselves to pacifism, which is why poor little Payaken, had been ostracized by the Na'vi and the other Tolkiens because he took revenge on the whalers that killed his mother, which was also wonderful to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked at this up on the wiki and because I needed more information about the whales that have broken my heart.
Right.
And they're slightly transcendent. They're sentient, highly cultured. They have rich family histories, mathematics, poetry, sophisticated music. They have their own language, individual names. They communicate with the Na'vi using sign language. And they're very close to the marine reef clans. The Metkayina see them as siblings. And they have lifelong bonds with them. They call them their spirit brothers and sisters. They celebrate each other's families. The birth of a new child, mourn the loss of a family member. They can access their memories by connecting to each other. And they access their memories stored within the Awa and are able to share their experiences with the Na'vi. And they produce this special substance from a gland in their brains dubbed Amrita that completely stops the aging process of humans.
Because of course it does.
Yes, of course. which has turned them into the prime targets for whaling operations by the RDA. The killing of Roa and the death of her calf was just awful. Too much, Cameron.
Yep.
And the further maiming of Payaken just continued Wendy's traumatization. And the revenge that Payaken took on the ship and the people felt okay, but no. Mm-mm. But, you know, like, we get it. Humans are crap. That's basically the message that we're giving.
And it's not a false theme.
Right. Right. I felt like it was a little too much. Like, you know, it got me.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, though, watching Payaken's and Loak's relationship and friendship develop, you know, that was the first trailer that we got was Loak sitting on Payaken's fin or whatever, right? And they were talking about how they're both outcasts and they both don't feel, you know, like they really belong. And mainly we're hearing Loak say those things, right? But then, you know, Payaken lets Loak into their consciousness and Loak can now see like what exactly happened. And he becomes an advocate for Payaken. He becomes, you know, he's like, you don't understand. You know, they were just trying to help. They were just trying to protect their people. It's not something that, you know, I don't know if Payaken is a boy or a girl, so I just keep saying they. Do you know?
It seemed like it was a boy, but I could be wrong.
Okay. Could be either. But yeah, watching that relationship develop and mm-hmm. then ultimately towards the end, you see Pike and actually saving mm-hmm. the Na'vi people and saving Loak and being there. And then she got to join back with mm-hmm. the tribe, with their own tribe, you know, the Tolkien tribe. And right. I just thought that that was really beautiful.
And that's what I'm going to have to choose to believe, is that Payaken's wounds were very superficial.
Yeah, yeah.
And he is going to lead a nice long life.
Yeah, he's fine. Everybody's fine.
Yep.
I mean, the mom and the baby, not fine.
Right.
But, you know, that's the whaling industry, I guess.
Yes.
I loved the whole sequence of how, and I saw this movie like the day it came out, and it's like a month later. So I've been trying to jog my memory because it's a 3-hour long movie and there's a mm-hmm. lot going on.
I just saw it just before New Year's.
Oh, okay. Oh,
yeah.
You saw it recently.
Yeah, I just saw it just before New Year's. We were waiting for the girls to come home.
It's awesome. I wanted to see it one more time, but winter break got away from me.
Mm-hmm.
But the sequence where all the kids were going and trying to, I think trying to save Payaken. Was it Payaken or was it the mom when they were trying to get the little routing signal out of the fin? So that was
that was Payaken in the beginning. He was trying to remove that.
No, but then when all the kids were together, because they're like that, they're marked for death or something,
right? I don't remember.
You know what I'm talking about?
I remember the scene.
Yeah, they worked so well together, and then mm-hmm. everybody like dives underwater and they mm-hmm. start hiding behind the places that they can hide behind, mm-hmm. and it was. You know, just there's so much of just those scenes where, you know, these two tribes, or the Sully family and the Metkayina, you know, the kids, they just seem to kind of hate each other until there's something that needs to be done. And then all of a mm-hmm. sudden they're like this solidified unit.
Yep.
And they're like, we're going to save the world. So I love it.
Yep.
What else do you have for?
That's it for the.
For your Tolkien.
For the Tolkien.
For the Tolkien. That's awesome. So my next point that I have, I loved the character Kiri. I loved her. I love the potential of her. I love learning about her. You know, my Game of Thrones brain really wants to like theorize what's in store mm-hmm. for her for the next 3 movies, because I feel like she's going to be a central role with her connection that she has to Ewa.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me if I'm totally off base here. Do you feel like maybe she is a creation of Ewa through Grace Augustine?
That's what I've read.
Oh, okay.
And that seemed to make sense to me, like that it wasn't that Grace was getting it on with somebody.
Right. Well, obviously.
Right.
But just this connection that she has to Ewa is so, so rich and so deep. You know, I love the fact that when she was sleeping on the forest floor mm-hmm. and all the wood sprites came down and just covered her as she mm-hmm. slept, you know, and we know from the first movie that that's actually a really good sign of a pure spirit. Cause that's what happened right. to Jake, right? When the wood spirit saw him and came down, and she's like, whoop, you need to go to my tribe. Let's go. You know, that's a sign. Mm-hmm. I love that she was able to move everything under the water with her hands, you know, mm-hmm. and everybody's looking at her like, what, how did you do that?
I kind of felt like there were a lot of things about her character that they left unfinished and probably purposefully.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And she knows that she's different. You know, she hates that she's different, but she also, you know, when she's by herself and she's in that meditative state where she's either under the water or in the trees or on the forest floor, when she's just communicating with nature, you know, you can really see the effect that her spirit has on what's around her. I mean, even when she's sitting on the dock, having that talk with Jake, and the fish are just swimming around just her feet, you know, like mm-hmm. all of the animals and creatures and everything like that, they're just completely drawn to Kiri. And I think that that's beautiful. I think that it's beautiful to be different in this very unique way that obviously is going to mean something later, because you don't just kind of sprinkle that in for nothing, I right. think.
No, I agree. I think she's got more to come.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think about her seizure under the water?
So that's also like, it was like an unfinished plot line. And mm-hmm. I just feel like it's there for a reason. They're laying seeds for the next movie, I would assume. Yeah. That it means something. Mm-hmm. It's not just like a seizure. It means something else.
Obvious. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think it's epilepsy.
No.
No.
It means something. Mm-hmm. What did you think about her voice? So she's voiced by Sigourney Weaver.
Right. I didn't know that until today.
Really? See, yeah. I knew it immediately, and it kind of threw me out. Like,
really?
Like her, you know, our voices change as we get older, and a teenager sounds different than a 60-year-old woman.
Yeah.
And it definitely threw me out, and I was kind of thinking, I don't know. It just threw me off each time I heard it.
So what if when at the end of the first movie, when they were trying to get Grace's spirit from her broken body into her avatar body, right? Mm-hmm. And it didn't work, right? Because she wasn't strong enough. What if that was when conception started? Because, mm-hmm. right, so maybe she is just, she's Grace. You right. know, she might be named Kiri, but she's Grace.
And that's why they have her being voiced by her.
Right.
And I think Sigourney's trying to play it, or they've auto-tuned it or something, so that it sounds younger and different.
But it's
and
not
maybe
working.
As she gets older, it will be more Sigourney. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, they're definitely going somewhere with that.
Right.
Yeah.
I love it that they kept Sigourney Weaver in it. I thought that she was excellent in the first one. And I love this twist of, mm-hmm. you know, because Grace always wanted, Grace wanted to be she didn't want anything else. She just wanted to be a part of the Na'vi people. She really, really loved being in Pandora. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's so great that she's this character that seems to be in complete balance with, it's almost like being in balance with force, right?
Yep.
You know, she's the light and the dark, and she brings mm-hmm. balance to the nature, you know. I'm sure
she's helping to save them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For sure. And that's totally what Grace would have done if Grace had lived.
Yes. So, mm-hmm. That was all that Grace wanted to do, was to save mm-hmm. them. Yeah.
From stupid RDA.
Stupid humans.
Stupid humans doing stupid things.
Yeah.
So things that I love about Kiri's character is that she tamed her Ikran by asking it to be her friend. For those that can't remember, the Ikran were the ones that you had to fight and battle mm-hmm. to make the bond and then have the first flight. And it's traumatic for everybody. But Kiri just went up and said, "Will you be my friend?" And then they were bonded. So that's definitely something that, you know, if I had seen that or heard of that as her adoptive parents, I'd be like, I think we should probably pay attention to this.
Yeah.
See what happens. Uh-huh. That's not normal.
Yep.
When she connects to the spirit tree, she gets to have a vision of her mom and talk to her mom. And I really loved the fact that they had that whole scene together. I thought that was really beautiful. And then I've talked about the rest of the cool things about her character, but she is to me the most interesting new addition to to the story. And yeah. I can't wait to see what's in store for her.
I think you could really see how much she felt. Like, she was very sentient. She was very aware of other, you know, beings, feelings around her. She seemed mm-hmm. very connected with all of that. Yeah. And you can just tell that she's special.
Mm-hmm. And she's so kind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the rest of them are all, like, you know, feral dogs or something. And, yeah. you know, Kiri comes in, she's like,
they were like teenagers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I love the fact that she gave advice to Natiri's mom, whose name is escaping me, but she's the Tsahit for the Omotikaya people. And she was treating someone, one of the kids that had gotten injured. And Kiri said, why don't you use this different kind of tree bark? Because this doesn't sting as much. So she has that love of botany that Grace had. She's got that connection with nature from Awa. And, you know, I think that she could be like a super Tsahit, you know, mm-hmm. she could be the yep. Tsahit to end all Tsahits.
I agree.
I'm tired of saying that word. what do you have?
All right. So I have some criticism of the final act.
Let's do it.
In the beginning of the movie, it's quickly established that the Na'vi are in a different place than where we first found them in the beginning of the first movie. They're now involved in a violent, deadly guerrilla war with the RDA. I found this a bit jarring at first, because what I remembered and loved most from the first movie was the innocence and the beauty of the Na'vi. But I was able to get past that and get into the new vibe of the movie. I get it. You know, because of what happened previously mm-hmm. and because of what has continued to happen, their world has been changed by the war that has been waged against them. And they're defending their world. I certainly became firmly enmeshed in the characters and the story as it went along. And I think when I got into the final climactic act, I would say the last 45 to 60 minutes of the movie, I just felt like it was just too much. Too violent, too long, too harrowing. I found myself feeling uncomfortable and wishing it was over already. And I mean, ooh. It was broke up a little bit by scenes that kind of gave you a little bit of respite from it. But overall, that's what I continued to feel. I was shocked to hear Spider say fuck at one point.
Me too.
I thought I misheard it. And Lainey looked it up afterwards and was like, nope, it was in there. And it's not that I'm a purist by any means. I think anybody who knows me knows I don't care about violence and cursing.
Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah. But I felt like the last movie was pretty firmly PG. And this one was R. Like, I know it retained that PG-13 rating, but really it went right up to the line. And I do think if this had been a live action movie with the same content, it would have been rated R.
Oh, that's and interesting.
I wondered what, like, people like you thought that took your kids to see it. And I guess your kids are older than I was thinking they were because, you know, time stops for everybody.
Yeah. They're 9 but, and 11. But
yeah. And I just wondered what people thought, because when we think of Avatar, we do think of, you know, it's a fairy tale, you know, mm-hmm. it's a Disney movie.
right. Yeah. You know, it's funny because I didn't have any problems and my kids didn't have any problems with any of the content. And I think maybe because it was a lot, it wasn't fully live action, like you said, mm-hmm. probably had something to do with it. Because I remember I was just talking about this earlier when I was recording with Jason and Ben. We were talking about Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. And my husband and I, about halfway into the movie, we looked at each other. I go, is this PG-13? And so, like, it was so much like a horror movie that we had to make, like, double check the rating while we were watching mm-hmm. the movie. But I never felt those vibes with the way of water. But I did remember when Spider said fuck, and I remember Adam goes, oh.
Of course.
He doesn't bat an eye. He doesn't bat an eye when he hears it come out of my mouth.
Right. But
he hears on TV. He's like, right. Oh, did you hear that? Did you hear that? I'm like, yeah, man, I heard it.
You know, it kind of, did you see Maleficent too?
I did not.
It kind of reminded me of that. Like, I liked Maleficent the first one, and I kind of felt the same way. Like, 2/3 of the movie were really good, and 1/3 just went off the rails. And it was like, this is a Disney children's movie. Like, every, you know, spoiler alert, right. It's pretty violent. And I don't want this to overshadow all the great things that I said about this movie, because I'm not saying it ruined the movie or that the movie wasn't great. I really liked the movie. I thought it was amazing. Probably the best theater experience I've had in 2022. I will be lined up to see the sequels in the theater. But for me, the final act could have been better. And it's not where it landed. It's how it got there.
So, you know, hearing you say this, I remember thinking when I was watching the movie, I totally forgot that I thought about this until you were talking. I did feel that we had one extra element that didn't need to be in there. Like with Colonel Miles coming back with all the other guys in their avatars, right? Okay, so you have that going on. Then we turn around, we have the wailing people. I thought that we could have had one or the other, but having both made it very, very, a very complicated story.
Yeah.
That did kind of culminate into a really violent end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were both fantastic, but, you know.
Yeah. And I think adding to all of that, you know, the whale being machine gunned, you know, I just think everything all together was just too much. Like, 70%, Cameron. 70%
right.
of that.
It's like Coco Chanel says, right before you go out, always take off one accessory.
Yeah.
You know, you always have one thing too many on you. You know, take it off and then leave the house. So I think James Cameron needs somebody to be like, okay, Coco, just take one off.
I don't know who's going to be that person. James Cameron, like, every movie I make makes billions of dollars. Nobody's telling me what to do.
Right. He's not, I mean, really, he's not doing anything wrong, right?
Right.
Clearly, he makes billion-dollar movies. But at the same time,
right.
You know, we didn't need the whaling industry plus the avatars coming back with the dead guy,
right.
Plus the new this, plus the, you know, the guerrilla warfare. You know, there's 5 movies. Like, let's just take it down a little bit or
pace
have
yourself.
A TV series. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go on Disney Plus and have like a whaling industry, 1-hour show.
Yeah, I think I remember when the first Avatar movie came out, and he said something about, somebody asked him why he didn't have to interview or something like that. And he was like, yeah, well, now that every movie I make is making $1 billion, they kind of let me do what I want to do now.
Oh, Coco. I mean, good for him. He, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's
backs it
where
up.
Most people want to get is like,
right.
There's no one that can tell me to stop.
Right. That's you know,
and
Martin
I don't
Scorsese
want it to
levels.
Over. I don't want the criticism to overshadow the good things about the movie. But if I'm being honest, I would say, for me, it was too much. Now, other people, you know, like walking out, I think my husband and my daughter were okay with the level of action, and me and Monica were like, no, it was too much, you know. So everybody's going to be different in what they wanted out of it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's one of those movies that you walk out and you feel like your hair is on fire, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And and I love that feeling, you know. I just love walking out of a movie, especially when I've paid as much as it costs to go to the movies, right?
Right.
I'd love to come out with that whole, woo, like, let's do that again. But yeah, I mean, I totally, your criticism is totally valid, and it needs to be said, right? I mean, that's a James Cameron movie, though. I mean, you can always just, there's always one thing that you can lift right out, and
yeah.
It would be just as good, James.
Yeah, and it was just, it also, Like, if I was going to see Terminator 7, I think we're up to 7 now.
Yeah.
I would expect that, but right. I didn't expect it here. You know, just took a turn that I didn't think it was going to do yeah. that. Yeah.
That's interesting because we can have this be my fourth point and just move right into it. But I didn't know what to expect, honestly. You know, he kept the plot so under wraps. And mm-hmm. even the trailer, the very first trailer that came out, it's, you know, a kid that kind of looks like Jake and he's talking to a whale mm-hmm. and then he goes underwater and, you know, you have that beautiful shot of him holding the fin and, oh, it's like a perfect screenshot or poster shot.
Yep.
And you still, from that first trailer, that teaser, you're like, what did I just watch? Like, I don't understand. Like, what is this? Why are they in the water? Don't they live in the trees? Like, I don't understand.
Right. Right.
So when I, you know, when I wanted to see that, usually I shy away from trailers, but I was just desperate to know mm-hmm. a plot.
I don't think I saw the trailer, or if I did, it was way, way long time ago that it didn't really influence me.
Yeah. But like, I don't know about you, but when I sat down, I go, I don't know what we're in for.
Oh, well, I had no idea. Yeah.
Yeah. All I know is that I know I'm going to like it because mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's Avatar, it's James Cameron. Like, that checks my boxes.
Absolutely.
So, and of course, you know, it was a beautiful, well-made, fantastic movie.
It was.
With a ton of action. So, you know, I love going into anything, not knowing what to expect, and then being just satisfied, completely mm-hmm. satisfied. You know, you don't get a lot of that very often, mm-hmm. especially with movies and critics and people that just want to hate on things, which I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are hating on Avatar. I don't care. I loved mm-hmm. it. I thought it was great. But yeah, so definitely not knowing what to expect, not knowing the plot, having very little information. I thought, that just added to the movie experience as a whole. And I really enjoyed that. As an aside, did you see that Kate Winslet broke the record for underwater filming?
Yes.
I wrote it down in my notes.
Yeah.
7 minutes.
I know. That's crazy, right?
I can barely hold my breath for 1 minute.
It's really funny because I read an interview from her. I was also a big fan of Titanic.
Yeah.
And she said, like, she would never work with James Cameron again. And it wasn't, like, she didn't have anything bad to say about him. She was just, like, it was quite a harrowing ordeal. And she, like, caught pneumonia and almost drowned. And she was never going to work with Cameron again. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was funny because I didn't know that she was voicing it until just before I saw it. Oh. And I was like, wow, well, she must have changed her mind somewhere down the road. I guess Titanic was a long time ago.
She was a
kid.
And
then for her to do that, like, and I didn't realize how much, you know, it doesn't feel like a live action movie, but really it is. Because mm-hmm. when you look at how much they put into, you know, that's really people doing that stuff. And they just dress it up. But it really is amazing, the shots that they've done and everything mm-hmm. that goes into making this movie. That's why it took 13 years.
So much time. Mm-hmm. It was so much time.
And nobody but a movie like this would even attempt to do that kind of stuff.
Right.
But right. it's because it's James Cameron and they know they're going to make a lot of money on it and right. nobody says no to him. So he just does it. And I mean, technologies are being born out of this. It really is amazing.
Yeah, he is an innovator. And I think that that's also really exciting. You know, it's exciting to have a director that you don't have to know anything about the movie. You just know, mm-hmm. oh, this is written and directed by so-and-so. I'm in. I don't know what it's going to be, but I'm in.
Absolutely.
I feel the same way about Peter Jackson. You know, yep. I've loved everything that he's done. And if I hear that he's attached to a project, I just know I'm going to go see it. It's going to be
Spielberg. I would see anything Spielberg makes.
100%. Quentin Tarantino mm-hmm. as well for me. is another one. I don't need to know anything else other than it's Quentin Tarantino. I know I'm in for a weird ride.
Yeah.
Do you have another one?
I have one last one.
Okay.
Walking out of the movie, I had mixed feelings about it. Like we talked about, you know, the last 45 to 60 minutes of the film. But I was reminded when I was thinking back about it, I was reminded of something that Jason has often said on his podcasts. And that is that he likes movies and shows that make you feel something. And I really do, too. And that's why whenever he would say that, it really spoke to me. And I think that's what this movie really achieves. It's more than a popcorn flick. And boy, does it make you know that. It made me feel, and I think maybe my strong reaction to this was maybe how I was feeling at the time. Maybe I was a little fragile. And like I said, there's a lot of message built into Avatar. And although it's about a fictional world, more fictional than really most stories tell you about, the parallels to real world issues are very front and center. And in a time where it feels like the world's kind of on fire.
Yeah.
You could pick any headline today and it kind of feels relevant to some of the messages in this movie. For example, Russia invading Ukraine, which is something that hadn't even happened when this movie was filmed. And yet it does feel very relevant to what the actions in the movie that really came to mind for me. But you could probably pick any, you know, conflict that is close to your heart and mind at the time. And
bullying, racism, moving, absolutely. Differences, yep.
And I think, like you said earlier, it's ultimately about the lengths that families go to protect each other and the tragedies that living beings endure at the hands of humans. And all of that is real and happening every day. And I think all of us have a story like that. And I think that's why this movie really makes us feel something, which is ultimately why, in my opinion, it's such a success and has done so well and will continue to do well. The franchise will continue to do well because it does that really well.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have to worry about old Jim Cameron anytime soon.
Yeah.
You know what? And I love what you said there about shows or movies that make you feel something, because I think that you and I are alike in the way that we really gravitate towards those shows. Like, I need you to pull at my heart somehow. I need to be invested in the story. I need to be invested in this world that you're trying to show me. And the movie does an excellent job of really not only making you root for the Sully family, but rooting for all of the people of the Na'vi, right? Metakaina people and the Ometakaya people. I got it. You know, it's like anything in life, like you were saying, you know, any kind of change, and this can really go with anything in our world today, right? Any kind of change is always scary. It's always scary. You never know what kind of reception you're going to get. We just moved to a new town. Like, I don't know anybody here. And to me, that's really nerve-wracking.
And I've always lived in the same area. So that didn't speak to me, but it spoke to you.
Right, exactly. And, you know, but it makes me long for where we used to live, you know, on the coast with all of our people, you know.
And now you have to start that over again.
Yeah, but it can also hinder the way that you look at your new situation. Like with Neytiri, she really closed herself off and didn't open herself up to where they were living because I think she viewed it as temporary. And I think that you see that a lot with anybody that has any change in their life. I mean, even when you look at the pandemic, here, wear a mask. Well, that's different. I don't want to do that. You know, and then all of a sudden everybody's acting crazy about it. I mean, you can attach that I don't like change mentality to anything, to anyone. And I think that those universal themes is what connects people to these stories. And James Cameron is so good at having those universal themes come out in his movies. So I get a little defensive when I've heard a few people say that they don't think that there's story to Avatar, because I just wholeheartedly disagree.
I definitely think there's story. Mm-hmm. And I think it takes a lot of talent to create a story that speaks to different people in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can have one theme, like, hit all sorts of different people mm-hmm. for different reasons.
Right.
Hey, that's great.
I mean, there's so many different things that when I was rethinking about this movie, certainly, like, if I'm the victim of racism mm-hmm. or oppression, it's going to speak to me in that way. Mm-hmm. And it's going to really depend on where that person's coming from mm-hmm. as to how it speaks to them. Because it's such general tones, and that makes it sound like it's simple, but it's not simple.
No, it's a simple concept that's very difficult to execute.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. You're making me love the movie even more, and I already loved it.
Yeah. Prepping for it made me love it more. Yeah.
I loved going to the wiki and just kind of going around on the wiki. I thought that was really fun.
The names are hard. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, they're so hard.
Yeah.
So the last thing that I want to talk about is Spider.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, what a great character, right? I really enjoyed his character. I don't know how old that kid is, but he had like really defined muscles for however old he mm-hmm. was, because he didn't look like he didn't look old enough to have that chiseled of muscles. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it was so great how, you know, obviously a character like Spider would have all of those really defined muscles, because he's living in the trees. He's balancing off of things. He's jumping and trying to keep up with Na'vi, who are, you know, twice his size.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that, you know, the story is that you can't do cryo sleep as an infant. So he was left behind, and he was like the Mowgli of the town, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And
had Tarzan vibes. Also.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I see in the future that Spider and Kiri are going to have something together, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they have a really deep love for each other that goes beyond them being adoptive siblings. I think that it is a romantic love. That it would be fun to see if Spider decides to get an avatar and become a Na'vi for reals. Mm-hmm. Right. I'd be interested to see if that is something that happens in the future. But I thought that his character was written really well, because he really is the character that is caught between two worlds. And mm-hmm. as much as he hates his father, which he should, and he knows that his father is dead, and he knows that this avatar is not his father, but he still feels that pull.
It's the only father he has, unfortunately. You
know? Right, right. Mm-hmm. And it's memories. It's downloaded memories is all mm-hmm. it really is. And he's a shitty guy. He's mm-hmm. just a terrible human being. But Spider has been raised by this loving family. He's been raised with love, with empathy, with, you know, this connection to everything around him. You know, he's grown up as a Na'vi. And so he sees that his, I don't know, memory dad is lying on the bottom of the ocean, and he can't just leave him behind. As terrible as it's going to be for the future movies, I'm, you know, this is going to be like, you know, Michael Myers, who keeps coming back unless you blow his head off.
Yeah.
I think that it speaks to not only Spider with, you know, kind of the man that he's becoming, but also to how he's been raised by Neytiri and Jake, you know, in this loving environment, that he can have so much empathy for this person that he really has no love for.
Right.
You know, and I just, I felt so bad for him so many times because it was like he was helping them, or he was helping RDA, but then he was like not helping them. And my guess is that he just spent the whole story, his entire arc, just scared, you know?
Yeah.
And
right. And he didn't have many choices.
He didn't. And I'm so glad that it wasn't like that the Sully family wasn't mad at him, you know, for
right.
giving them up or helping them along. Like, you know, Jake has been in that situation before mm-hmm. with Colonel Miles. So I think that, you know, that really helps with how they kind of look at Spider. You know, he's just a great character. I can't wait to see kind of what happens with his character as time goes on. He was a really good addition to that marriage between humans and the Na'vi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked his character a lot.
So that's all I have for my points. Do you want to go to notes?
Yeah, I only have a couple notes.
Sure.
Cliff Curtis, who you may know from the early seasons of Fear the Walking Dead.
When it was good.
Before AMC ruined it. plays Metcalina.
So that's his...
No, Metcalina Chief, Tonawari.
Tonawari, yep.
Yeah. Cliff is from Maori descent, and the film used many peoples of Maori and Pacific Islander descents. They tried to, obviously, I think, the Metcalina people were inspired by Pacific Islander natives.
Okay. I liked it that he got
indigenous peoples.
Mm-hmm. I love it that he got to use his, you know, his actual accent, the way that he mm-hmm. speaks. You know, I thought that was really neat.
Yeah.
He had such a commanding voice. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I've really liked him in everything he's been in. What else? The recombinants, which were the cloned Na'vi, that the villain RDA recombinants became Na'vi to infiltrate into their world. But then they all wear army fatigues, and they so obviously make no attempt to blend in at all, which right. was kind of confusing to me. Like, what was the point of that? Because they didn't... I mean, they became Na'vi and then immediately were like, here we are, we're the bad guys. So I didn't quite get that.
I had a kind of a visceral reaction to them getting their own Ikran.
That yes. whole,
because it's such a sacred thing that the Na'vi mm-hmm. does. And I feel like they really sullied that whole experience and that tradition. And I know that that was probably the intent, you know, mm-hmm. but just, it was like when in Fear the Walking Dead, when, you know, Cliff Curtis's character comes across those kids and they're killing the chickens and eating mm-hmm. the chickens instead of just using their eggs. You're just like, what are you doing? You guys right. are stupid. You guys are just, you do not understand this world that you're living in.
I agree. Yeah. And it just didn't make sense. It just, mm-hmm. why did they have to become Na'vi to do that?
Yeah,
it just didn't make sense to me. I thought it was interesting. They had Edie Falco. She didn't have too much of a role, but from The Sopranos and Nurse Jackie, she played General Francis Ardmore, who mm-hmm. was a commander at RDA. I think I didn't even recognize her for the first couple scenes. I think it was more her voice that I was like, I know that voice.
But she didn't sound like Carmella.
No, she did not sound like Carmella. And I think that's it for me for notes.
Okay. So I wrote down some of the new animals that we have. Like, of course, we had the banshees, which are called the Ikran, and that's Omotikaya's bonded animal. And then you have the Taruk, which is the big phoenix-looking bird, mm-hmm. dragon thing that that Jake rides at the end of the first movie, and he becomes Taruk Makto, which we didn't see Taruk this time, I think. I think that he doesn't have Taruk anymore. You have the Ilu, and the Ilu are the water horses. They're used by the Metkayina. They're kind of, they were like, they kind of look like dolphins, but with like almost like a swordfish nose to them. But I think that that is their bonded animal. That's the one that they actually bond. No. It's the other one that they bond with. But I loved watching them, you know, just glide down and glide up with these, with the Na'vi and the Ilus. I just thought that they had that the two animal and Na'vi person, they just had this nice symbiotic relationship with each other. And then you have the Skimwing, which is the Tsurok, which are the, I call them the flying fish.
Yes.
So, you know, and I think that those are the bonded animals. Those are the ones that they bond tails to their own mane. And then that becomes like their little horse, if for nothing else. Horse dragon. Sure. Horse dragon. And then lastly, you have the Tulkun, the big whales, who we've already spoken a lot about, and we love them. Totally.
The creatures are amazing. I can't imagine what goes into all that. It really is amazing.
Not to mention coming up with them, drawing them, everything. Yeah. And you have to be on some serious drugs to come up with some of this stuff.
Yep.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I think that's about it for our discussion. So let's move on to news. You want to do news?
Yeah.
News on Avatar.
All right. So I found this article from Entertainment Weekly, and it was an interview with James Cameron. Big shocker. And it says, what do you do after making the world's highest grossing movie of all time, shattering the record you yourself had set more than a decade earlier? If you're James Cameron, you take a breath and then dive headfirst into the deep end, literally. After topping the box office with 2009's Avatar, he decided to spend 13 years... on his sequel, which is set primarily underwater, requiring years of technological research and months of training actors to hold their breath for lengths that would impress even a Navy SEAL. And so what does Cameron say about this? He says, it sounds kind of nuts, the process. I mean, if Avatar hadn't made so much damn money, we'd never do this because it's kind of crazy. And I think he's talking about all of the underwater filming scenes that they use to create the scenes in Avatar. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, the sequels are a story about family and the lengths parents will go through to keep that family together and keep them safe. I always say this is producer John Landau, one of the producers, because, you know, James Cameron is also a producer.
What?
I know. He says, I always say that Jim's movies have universal themes, and really, there's no more universal theme than family.
I agree.
So another quote from James Cameron is, I do the ocean thing when I'm not making movies, so if I could combine my two greatest loves, one of which is ocean exploration, the other feature filmmaking, why wouldn't I? So again, I shouldn't have been surprised about that. And he also says, my colleagues within the production really lobbied heavily for us to do it dry for wet, hanging people on wires. Camera notes, I said, it's not going to work. It's not going to look real. I even let them run a test where we captured dry for wet. And then we captured in water a crude level of our in-water capture. And it wasn't even close. Yeah, he knew what he was going to do all along.
Right. Yeah. He's like, I'll play your little game, but we're going to do it my way.
That's right. So it's a great article. If anybody wants to read the whole thing, really gives you some...
What website is it on?
Entertainment Weekly. Holy cow, okay. Sigourney Weaver is 72.
No, she is not.
That's what it says. That's crazy. could easily hold her breath for 6.5 minutes, but Kate Winslet broke the record.
Yeah,
72. That's
insane. That's insane.
It really is.
So my article actually goes into that. It's from People, and it says, Kate Winslet says she has video of her 7-minute breath hold for Avatar. Quote, have I died? So Kate Winslet says she smashed my own record by a minute when she dove underwater for 7 minutes and 15 seconds. Mm. Kate Winslet captured the moment she emerged from her 7+ minutes long breath hold for Avatar, The Way of the Water on camera. Quote, I have the video of me surfacing saying, am I dead? Have I died? And then going, what was my time? She told Total Film in a new interview published Tuesday. Quote, straight away, I wanted to know my time, and I couldn't believe it, Winslet, 47, added. The next thing I said was, we need a radio set. I wanted director James Cameron to know right away. Winslet, who plays the Na'vi character Ronal in the long-awaited Avatar sequel, told the outlet that she only wound up attempting the 7-minute, 15-seconds long breath hold to break a record for the longest amount of time a person has held their breath for a movie that was previously held by Tom Cruise. Quote, well, I didn't have to hold my breath for over 7 minutes, Kate Winslet explained. Quote, it's just that the opportunity to set a record presented itself.
I mean, to beat Tom Cruise, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, take it, you know?
Yeah.
In October, James Cameron called Winslet a demon for prep during an interview with New York Times when he and the Way of Water cast first revealed which actor from the ensemble could hold their breath underwater the longest. Quote, she latched onto the free diving as something that she could build her character around, the director said of Winslet.
That's just amazing.
I want Kate Winslet to be my friend.
No kidding.
So anyways, that's the news I have, and that's the news you have, so let's move into our feedback.
All right.
Alma Contreras says, I watched the movie and loved it. I love the relationship dynamics. I really hated how us humans ruin our own planet and then gotta go take over a beautiful planet in a forceful manner. Truly sad. And yes, I cried several times. Can't wait to hear y'all's thoughts. I'll tell you what, I think I cried for half the movie. I was dehydrated at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, the whales got me. And I probably thought about that for the rest of the movie.
Oh my gosh. It's something about whales.
It really is. And like usually, so this is a story. I don't know if you've seen this. It was a movie. It's kind of like a documentary, but it was in the big theater. It was called Earth. And then they had another one that was about the seas later. Mm-hmm. So my kid, she's like 10, 11. She's obsessed with animals, drags me to see the Earth. And it was like about this starving polar bear. And I won't even talk about how it ends. But like, that has scarred me for life. And then, mm-hmm. like, 2 years later, they put out The Seas, and she's like, oh, Mom, we got to go see that. And I'm like, no, no, no. Like, I'm somebody who needs to look up, does the dog die before I go see a movie with a dog in it? And
I do
like,
the same thing.
Yes. It's like mm-hmm. a no for me.
Yeah.
Like, again, kill all the humans. I'm fine with that.
It was like all the first them. John Wick movie. I needed somebody to tell me that puppy was going to die.
I think I did have advance notice. Yeah, I think somebody did tell me about that first. So I came
for the second for movie, Keanu Reeves, like on his press junket, he's like, okay, I've been cleared to tell you that the dog does not die in this movie.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, yeah, I can't. Or like, you know, they'll have these movies about like a dog and a veteran. I'm like, no. No,
oh,
no.
When they're laying on their grave and they won't leave. Yeah, that's terrible.
No, no.
Or, well, I've been scarred by those videos. There was one video of a zoo in China that had starving animals, and they were like, all these people are just looking at them and they're like crying out for food.
I can't even have like senior dog sites on my Facebook feed because I'll be like getting
just,
in my car.
Throw kittens or dogs into the water and you're just like, what is wrong with you? Like,
no.
That kind of stuff breaks my brain.
No, I can't. I just have to turn it off.
I'm like, kill all the people. That's fine. The less people we have, the better. But please leave the animals alone. They didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah. So Fred Weisinger says, ugh, so long. Yes, visually, it was mostly fantastic, but I felt that the plot was just too much and the acting felt really off to me. Also, it's called Avatar, but I don't think there were actually any Avatar characters in this one, right?
Oh, there were.
Yeah, there were. Yeah. But I totally understand, Fred, and I hope you appreciated my comments that I made. Like, I did understand that I felt like it was a little too much.
Coco Chanel.
Yeah.
I hate it that it's Coco Chanel that said that, because I think that she's a monster. She was a monster. She was a spy for Hitler.
Oh, really?
Hmm. Yeah, she was.
I guess I don't know a lot about Coco Chanel.
Yeah, well, I learned that. You know, I'm a big history buff, and so mm-hmm. when I learned that, when I did, I was just like, "Bleh." So anytime I see Chanel, I'm like, "No, we don't need that."
Yeah.
Jim Pete says, "I liked Avatar a lot. But I'm in a weird place with even going to see this movie. Does anyone else feel that way? Everything I hear about is intriguing, but there's just something that keeps me from even blinking." Well, Jim Pete, just go.
I think it's been so long and we've heard so much about it. And it was like they were making it. And then it was like, well, no, now they're making two. And then it was like, no, now they're making three. And it's just been so long.
Yeah.
And actually it feels a lot longer even than the 14 years that it's been. So I think that's the issue. You know, it's mm-hmm. like something that's, it's like pretending like that we will ever have another Game of Thrones book.
That's exactly how it is.
Like, I'll see somebody on a forum that like is seriously like, I heard it's like in its final stages of publication, and I'm like, oh, my sweet summer child.
Sweet summer child.
Like, I'm in my 50s. I'm not holding out hope that I'll ever see that.
None of us are.
Yeah.
None of us are. I, you know, sorry, George R.R. Martin. We tried.
Yeah.
Danielle Joost says, "It's a moving story, and introducing the audience to the Water Clan was a great way of expanding the world. I missed the first 5 minutes or so and spent the movie confused about where Spider and Kiri came from, but Google was able to answer most of my questions after the movie. I'm very interested to see Kiri's story play out. Believe she's meant to be the result of an immaculate conception, which happened when Grace was bonded with Awa through the tree, which seems like the sort of story James Cameron would tell. I can't help but wonder if every Avatar movie will be the same rehashed plot. I really hope that the next one isn't another tale of how the humans tried to take over Pandora and destroyed everything in the process. It's a story worth telling, but we need something new next time around. This film was certainly beautiful to look at. Pandora never disappoints visually." Yeah.
I probably agree with all that. And that's probably where I saw your sentiments, Kristen.
Yeah, that's funny. That's the first time I read that. So yeah. I'm glad we all feel that way.
Yeah. Lainey Brunk, who is my daughter who I begged for feedback, gave me one line, which was Avatar, Way of the Water, directed by Michael Bay. That's what she felt like. She said it felt like a Michael Bay movie by the end.
Oh, Lainey. It was James Cameron.
Yep.
He's just as fantastical as Michael Bay and Jerry Bruckheimer.
Is that the last one?
We have one more.
Okay.
I always get her name wrong, and I'm so sorry. Typhaine Thibault says, "I watched it in 3D with my 11 and a half year old son, and we had a great time. Yes, the plot is a rehash. Yes, it is quite Manchian, but man, what good entertainment it is. And considering how much cinema tickets cost these days, that's what you want. I enjoyed it very much. There is definitely an obsession with water and sinking ships. That scene was clearly a Titanic callback." Yes. Very much.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that age group would be perfect, because that I mean, the movie is just so visually stunning, and there's so much going. I think that would be a really good age group for the movie.
My kids were, I mean, my son has ADHD on steroids. He doesn't sit for movies. He was glued, just loved every second of it. So that's when you know that you got him, you know?
Yeah. And that's the kind of movie you got to be in the movies for. You really do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't go for indie.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay.
I don't go. If I can watch it at home and it doesn't matter, I'm watching it at home. But Avatar,
right.
Marvel movies, Jurassic Park, stuff yeah. like that. That's
There's
theater.
Certain
that's
things you know you're going to get benefit from that big screen.
Right. 100%.
Our next is a voicemail from our good friend, Steve Brown.
Hello, it's showtime, folks. Kristen and Wendy, this is Steve, and I have absolutely no intention of watching Avatar: The Way of Water. Seriously, I may be one of the few people on the planet that has not seen the first one. So why would I go see the second one and take my time to send a voicemail? But here's the thing. I want to remain unsullied. I knew there was a word I wanted to use in this voicemail. I think I'm using it correctly. I wanted to remain unsullied by the Avatar franchise. That's why I haven't seen either one of those movies or have any intention of it. But anyway, I love the fact that Wendy and Kristen, you are covering this and that you guys are huge fans. And I can't wait to listen to the podcast because I will definitely be listening to your coverage of it. And you never know. You might convince me to actually watch both movies. I don't know. It could happen. Maybe. But anyway, welcome back to It's Showtime, folks. And can't wait to hear whatever's going to happen next. Love the coverage of Glass Onion. I was one of the people like Penny who wasn't until way late in the movie that I went, wait a minute, didn't one of those scenes didn't really look right with the glass switching thing? But heck, I didn't catch it. So I'll just admit it. Anyway, I've gone on too long already not talking about the movie. Love you guys. Love both you, Kristen and Wendy, and can't wait to see you again at a meetup someday. And also can't wait to hear this coverage of Avatar: The Way of Water. Bye for now.
I don't know what to say about that.
I don't either.
Let's just intersplice this with my favorite Steve Brown coverage of a Game of Thrones episodes where he said that Tommen was stuck between a cock and a mom place. Let's just squeeze that in here. I'll be happy with that.
I love anything that he does. He's just so I've had him on, you know, my podcast, I think once or twice before. And I always like, I love having him on a podcast as a guest, but I miss his voicemails. Mm-hmm. I just think he's great. Oh, Steve, please go see the movie. I hope that we did enough to help you realize that you
need to see. This would be right up your alley, Steve.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too. I think that you would enjoy it.
And honestly, if you listen to this podcast and then go see it, I think you wouldn't have to go see the first one. You could just go see the second one in the theater. Oh,
definitely. Yeah. I think that this one can stand alone on its own for sure.
I agree.
See, we've already made your viewing 3 hours less.
Yep.
So, you know, you can thank us later with cookies. I like sugar-free cookies.
And I hope to see you at another meetup. I don't know. The last two meetups or my last two trips have not gone well for me. So I'm a little worried about even scheduling anything. So we'll see.
I know that they're all meeting in New York. Are you going there?
No, I can't.
Yeah. I'd love to go to another meetup just to see your face and everybody else's face. I mean, I'm looking at your face right now, but
yeah, we definitely should because I would like to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'll do it one day. That trip is out there.
Yep.
Let's see. So thanks to all of our listeners, and especially thank you to everybody who sent in their feedback this week. We really love hearing from you. Keep it coming. You know, I know that Podcastica likes to, you know, do everything, and there's a lot of, you know, weird and niche or niche little elements that, you know, shows and movies and whatnot. But, you know, I think it's really fun to do a big blockbuster too. And, you know, it's really fun to just remember that we go to the movies to be entertained. You know, we go to the movies to have fun and to feel something. And I think that Avatar really clicks all those boxes. So I hope that those of you who listened, that you will go see the movie if you have not seen the movie yet.
And coming up on the next episode of It's Showtime, folks, Jason and Rima and Wendy will be talking about the 1984 James Cameron classic, The Terminator, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, Linda Hamilton, and Michael Biehn. I actually wasn't invited to be a part of that podcast, but since I just said it publicly, I am now going to be on it.
I was just going to say, really?
How I dare think you it, it try shows- to podcast on The Terminator without me?
I think that we should just do like a whole James Cameron block for yes. It's Showtime, folks. Like,
I'm okay, ready.
So next is The Abyss. Then we'll do Alien.
Yep. Yep. Or maybe we'll just do our own Terminator podcast and we'll put it out there and see who, which one they like
which
better.
Which one is better.
It'll be ours. Spoiler alert.
It will
alert.
Definitely be ours.
Yeah.
So we will have a post for the Jason and Rima and Wendy Terminator It's Showtime, folks, coming up. We're going to have that on facebook.com/podcastica, where you can leave comments for us to read on the podcast, or you can write in, or you can send us a voice message to talk@podcastica.com. There's also the Podcastica group, which I think is a private group or a public group. I'm not really sure. But that's a really fun place as well to go and get all of your feedback and interact with all of the listeners and fans of all the many shows and movies that we listen to. Watch.
And if you forget any of that, all of our contact information is at podcastica.com.
Well, that's a wrap on Avatar, The Way of Water.
Thank you, everyone, so much for listening.
And cut. All right, folks. Show's over.